This episode of The Run-Through is brought to you by Graff, home to the world's rarest and most revered diamonds. Visit graff.com and discover why a Graff engagement ring is the ultimate expression of your love and devotion. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mal.
And I'm Cho Minardi.
And it is officially spring, which means that wedding season has sprung. And we have Alexandra Macon and Elise Taylor, two of Vogue's preeminent wedding experts, on the show to chat with us about the most memorable, shocking, exciting, thrilling weddings they've ever covered in their combined 20 years at Vogue. But first, Choma, last week we talked about Dries Van Noten's departure, and now we have another major designer exit, Pier Paolo Piccioli.
I know, who knew? It's been quite a week. You know, I think we're going to just see a complete shift in the fashion world on the horizon because, you know, Pier Paolo was brought such a special sense of color and beauty and romance to fashion and to Valentino and the house. So obviously, you know, he worked also with Maria Grazia prior, and he's just kind of someone that people look to, not just for fashion, but for, you know, in terms of culture and cultural shifts. I think he's a great loss for the fashion world, I think, to not be there anymore. And the house announced that they wouldn't be showing a collection.
Yeah, men's or couture. That was quite shocking to me.
It was really interesting looking through, you know, the comments online, because a lot of people were kind of putting their two cents in about who could possibly be, you know, who could take that spot. And we can announce that it is actually going to be, yeah, it's going to be Alessandro Michele, formerly of Gucci. You know, he's famously based in Rome, and Valentino is like a Roman label and brand. And so it just seemed like the perfect fit. And people weren't wrong. The internet actually was right on this occasion. And I think people know him as someone who is a world builder. We've been talking about this a lot, you know, the idea of world building versus something that is much more in line with Phoebe Philo's approach of just beautiful clothes. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does with Valentino. He definitely has the chops for it. And I think a lot of people would love to see what he could do with couture, because a lot of those pieces that he made for Gucci had couture level details.
Oh yeah, he hasn't done couture.
No.
Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see what he does at the house. In other news, it seems that our favorite pop icons are releasing music this spring, which is super exciting. And by our favorite pop icons, I mean, obviously, Beyoncé.
It's literally tomorrow.
I know. Cowboy Carter. We've all been anticipating this record so much.
We had the wonderful Liam Hess, Vogue's living editor, but also music devotee, and Vogue Runway's Jose Criales Unzueta on the show to talk to us about all the albums we are anticipating so hotly this spring.
Yeah, and I mean, Liam got to interview Bjork for Vogue Scandinavia's cover story, which I'm extremely jealous about.
That just dropped this week, and it is a crazy cover. It is Bjork wearing the Margiela Couture Merkin dress. She and John Galliano are old friends. It's kind of a major moment.
Oh, it's such a perfect fit for her. Like, oh,
I know.
I mean, what a moment. We started by asking him what it was like to meet Bjork in the flesh in Paris.
You'd think someone like Bjork might be staying in one of those ritzy hotels around the Place Vendôme or, you know, somewhere in the first, but she was up in the hills of Montmartre, and I thought I was getting lost trying to find where this kind of kooky little hotel she was staying in. And just when I thought I got totally lost, I was like wandering down some alleyway, and then I saw through a gate this shock of black and white hair with colors streak through it, and I was like, that's got to be her. So I made a beeline in there, and you know, we sat down, we had some lunch.
Why do you think this was the right moment for her to be on the cover?
I think Vogue Scandinavia have wanted her on their cover ever since they launched, and she just wrapped up a big tour, she just wrapped up an album campaign, and so she's kind of in that creative, fertile, fallow period between making records, and she's just kind of out in the world absorbing things and figuring out what her next project is going to be. And it was interesting in that sense because it ended up being quite a wide-ranging conversation about, you know, her creativity, the people that she works with, and of course, fashion as well, and her place as a fashion icon, and how her style has evolved over the years.
I think about Bjork, and I think she definitely defined my college years. She's a star who appeals to so many generations. You know, what album did you discover her? What sort of appealed to you about her?
Well, I remember discovering her when I was a teenager, and I think I was probably 13 or 14. And I think it was actually the cover for Homogenic, and was like, what is this incredible image? And who is this incredible woman wearing this huge kimono-like Alexander McQueen dress? And the song that I really, really remember falling in love with is the song All Is Full of Love. And it's kind of a trip-hop song, but it's also a ballad. And it has these very lush strings and these beautiful harps, but then these quite kind of hard pummeling beats that come in halfway through. And I think it's that combination of textures of softness and hardness and that sense of two extremes, which is what makes Bjork so exciting, all of her music.
As you said earlier, you are sort of associated with music at Vogue.com. I feel like I keep hearing about how this spring is
crazed
with releases. What is happening, mm-hmm. and why is that the case? There wasn't a SAG strike for musicians. What's the deal?
The Pop Star Olympics.
Oh, the Pop Star Olympics.
It is, yeah. All of the pop girls are out for blood, and they're all releasing at the same time, which some people have speculated that maybe it's still actually a knock-on effect from the pandemic, because everybody was touring in 2021 and 2022.
Oh, interesting.
So then they were all in the studio last year, so now they're all releasing their albums in one go.
Oh, I like that theory.
And I think also there's so much more flexibility in how you can promote a record now. You know, back in the day, you had to do the full six-month rollout, whereas Beyonce really changed everything with her self-titled album.
As she does.
Dropped
as
overnight,
she does.
As she tends to do. Yeah, yeah. And now, if you want to announce your album and release it in 2 weeks, you can, because you can promote it yourself on social media and do a couple of online interviews.
What has already come out?
Yeah, so there's Ariana, then what else? There's Casey, which you wrote a beautiful piece about.
Can we use last names, please?
Oh, sorry. I'm Ariana Grande, Casey Musgraves.
Beyonce, Just on the Horizon with Cowboy Carter. And then we have Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department.
What are we expecting from Beyonce? We're all excited about the cover art. And yesterday she finally dropped the track list, which everyone was going nuts that she was, after all of our speculation, covering Jolene and Willie Nelson, which I was particularly excited about.
Yeah. I mean, she's had such a huge success already with Texas Hold'em.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no Hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus. Ooh. And throw your keys up. Hey. Stick around, round, 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 round. Stick around.
You know, it's been number one in the US and the UK. And I think she became the first black woman in history to top the country charts as well, which is pretty extraordinary given how closed-minded that world can be still, and it's still very challenging.
What I really love about that song is that it really brings you into this very country line dance moment. It has that beat, but it also feels like a song you can like that you can listen at the club. You know, it's a good time, and like all of my friends and I can't stop singing.
And doing the foot stamp, hand clap. You can almost hear the saloon doors swinging in the
it's
background.
It's very that. You're tipping your hat. You know what I mean? The spurs, all the things.
The other thing, obviously, we should talk about with Beyonce is the return of the cowboy, which is everywhere right now. And I have like a tinfoil hat theory that she was at Pharrell's first Louis Vuitton show last summer. Then in January, he did his cowboy collection. And she wore it to the Grammys and announced her album. So I'm like, was she in Pharrell's ear being like, do a
catch That's Marco Ducci's
Cowboys.
Theory too.
100, I mean.
Uh-huh.
There were other cowboy moments in the collections, right? I'm trying to think because I know we were talking about this a lot in Paris.
There were so many chaps. There were so many chaps.
Yeah, where were they?
Well, Stella McCartney had chaps.
That's right.
Well, oh. Vaquera had chaps, Sportmax, like curiously. D Squared, Casablanca. I'm like, and then there's more from like recent, like in recent history. Like Dior did them for the resort show for 2023. I'm like, there's something going on. And then if you add on top of that, that Bella Hadid is like now living in Dallas and dating a cowboy.
She is living the rodeo dream.
I live for it. She looks amazing.
It's all the fanfic I ever wanted.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I want
to. She looks pretty good on the cover of Vogue Italia this month too.
Gorgeous.
On a horse, nonetheless.
Ariana Grande released a new album, Eternal Sunshine, that has been quite the talk of the Vogue office. Is there any song on that album that you guys have been particularly enjoying?
I mean, Liam, we have to talk about We Can't Be Friends. What is it? Like, it debuted at number one. It's going viral on TikTok right now. And the internet and you and I have dubbed it her Robin single. Mm-hmm. Because it very much is giving you that sort of like Robin, kind of clubby, melancholic... Mm-hmm. Dancing on my own moment through obviously Max Martin.
I think they call it a sad banger. It's like the tears on the dance
very
floor thing.
Very
bad.
So sad, so sexy.
Throbbing beats.
It's very much a song about sort of like breaking up with someone and that first moment of moving on that is about like we actually can't be friends in order for us to move on, right? So it's very like it's very what you're saying, which is like it's very sort of crying at the club. It's a great beat. It's very clubby, but at the same time, it is melancholic. It's sad. It's a little romantic. It's nostalgic. It's really like a standout in the album to me.
Yeah. And it's such a slick pop song as well. Max Martin always gets everyone together. You know, it's like impeccably produced.
It is. It's a perfectly finished song.
Chama, what album are you most excited about?
I'm looking forward. I think SZA has a new album coming. I'm really looking forward to her album. She's headlining Glastonbury.
Does Twigs have a new album?
Twigs has a new album. I've heard several songs from it. It's brilliant. That's coming out this year too. I mean, it does feel like we've shifted this focus to female voices, which I really love. I think for a long time, the Grammys weren't a place that you would see many women being awarded. Now I feel like that's totally changed and it's kind of universal across all kind of genres.
Yeah, last year at the Grammys, women really dominated. Oh, and the other one that I'm really looking forward to as well is Dua Lipa. Jose, I know you're a big Dua Lipa fan too.
Dua Lipa.
Radical Optimism is the name of the album. I think I need to say something controversial yet brave. Liam, walk with me here. When Lorde released Solar Power in, I think it was 2021, it must have been because I didn't even work here. It was interesting to see the reaction to everyone because everyone was like, oh my God, Lorde is happy. But I feel like the culture overall didn't really react to that album the way they might now. You know, like that album is about hindsight. It's about sort of growing up, finding peace, optimism, radical optimism, if you will. And I feel like we're now seeing the sort of like delayed Lorde effect on music, which is like Ariana and Casey, which we should also talk about this, talk about their Saturn returns and this idea of like hindsight with their lyrics and love and like finding peace within themselves and in their lives and like wanting to do more with less. And then you have Dua talking about radical optimism in all her interviews and talking about this positivity and talking about being sort of like positive in the face of adversity, like, you know, her posing in front of a shark. And I'm like, Lorde was doing this with Solar Power. And I kind of love to see it, like, have an effect in culture and in pop. But also, I'm the biggest Lorde fan, so.
Same. And I love that album. But you're right.
Me
she
too.
Was really the Nostradamus of...
She was. She said, it's time for all of us to grow up. And I agree.
Yeah. And the girls they've all been in therapy as well. There's all the...
It's very I mean, Radical Optimism is what? It's a book, right?
Did we talk about Lana?
She's potentially going country too.
Yeah, she's potentially going country, allegedly.
Lana's new album is called Lasso. That's pretty on the nose if we're talking about country western.
Yeah, released September 2024.
But we all know Lana likes to switch things up at the last minute. You never quite know what's coming.
You never
she can change
know.
Genre, she can change title. And that's the joy of Lana.
Exactly. It's also crazy to think that it'll, like, after all of the recent titles, the fact that she's going back to one word. You know what I mean?
Wait, has she historically had long titles?
Well, the last two are Chem Trains Over the Country Club. And, like, it's even a meme. Like,
wow,
people just sort of,
that.
like
yeah,
make
when
Meghan
Markle announced American Riviera Orchard, everyone was like, is this Lana's new album?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're interchangeable, aren't they?
Yeah, not no.
I read that Charlie XCX, who also has an album coming out, that on Twitter or X, she said that the constant demand for access to women's bodies and faces is misogynistic and boring in album artwork. And she just has a green background with the word brat on hers. Is there a bigger conversation to be had about, like, all the album artwork that's been dropped? Do we feel like it's different than it used to be? Is it the same?
I actually spoke to Charlie XCX, who is a hilarious interview if you ever get the chance to speak to her. She's very smart and very funny. And she was saying about that artwork that she chose it deliberately to be quite abrasive. Jose, I feel like we were speaking about this the other day, right? With the Dua artwork where she's not really front and center. The Ariana Grande artwork, she has her back turned to the photographer. What's your take on it?
I think it goes back to what we're talking about earlier in terms of what you were saying earlier in terms of promotion, right? Like, it got, like, I think at the beginning or a few years ago, the album cover was very much the visual you got, right? That was the visual that was everywhere. And if you bought the CD and then you opened it, you had a booklet and you had the lyrics there, and maybe that was sort of like the extended universe of images, right? But at first, all you got was that, the one image. Like, things have changed since then, right? Like, Dua doesn't need to be front and center in her album cover because you know what she looks like. And if you're confused, you can find many images, right? And, like, she posted the one image.
It's called Google.
Exactly. And then, you know, she posted the one image on Instagram, but then there's the other image, and then there's all the images inside, and then there's all the promo that she's doing. Like, you get it. Like, Charlie, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah. And you know, both with artists like Dua and Charlie, you know that they have very solid visions.
Exactly.
Like, I really trust Dua. I know she's taken us on a journey here.
Exactly.
You know, she's a pop star who loves being a pop star, and that is my favorite
and
thing.
She knows fashion. She is a very good visual. Like, she has really good taste. You know what I mean? So I agree. And I mean, even Beyonce is a good example. And she was like, baby, but you are the visuals, right? When she basically refused to release all the visuals for Renaissance. And to the point where, like, yes, it became a conversation, but we didn't really quote unquote need the visuals because we got it. Like, we knew what it was about. And the moment the tour started, we already, like, people already knew that it was sort of like the silver moment. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's an interesting thing to say in terms of promotion, in terms of, like, the need for the album cover in itself. But I also think Charlie's right. Like, what if she doesn't want to be in a bikini on top of a car for this one because she wasn't in the last one, right? Like, that's fine. And I think we have to think more expansively in terms of, like, the images that we receive from all these celebrities because we have so much more access to them than we used to.
Liam, thank you so much for joining us. Jose, thank you as ever.
An honor and a privilege.
The Run-Through will be back in just a moment. Created for eternity, bring beauty, radiance, and joy to your wedding day with diamond jewelry from Graff. Solitaire rings, wedding bands, necklaces, pendants, earrings, and bracelets are handcrafted at Graff's London atelier. Precious keepsakes to be worn, loved, and treasured, and to be passed down the generations, the heirloom jewels of tomorrow. Visit Graff.com and explore a truly rarefied collection. And we're back.
So we're here with our colleagues Alexandra Macon and Elise Taylor to talk about Vogue's wedding coverage.
Alex Troma, we're so excited to see you on Zoom. Elise is in the studio. Elise, what is your title, Elise?
Senior living writer. Elise, we don't need to use it.
Okay.
Senior living's a little tough. We could say living writer.
That's true. It does sound like
she's senior living. She's living senior.
That's really funny.
Oh, yeah.
She covers all royals, weddings, babies, breakups, you name it. Mm-hmm. All kinds of travel, restaurants, anything you need to know about living the good life, you go to Elise. And Alex has really, I would say, I would credit a lot of Vogue's dominance in the wedding department to Alex's zest for weddings. Alex was the managing editor of Vogue.com for a long time and now has her own e-commerce platform, Over the Moon, which is a wedding and baby registry, and also produces wonderful content on its own.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun to work on.
Well, we are very excited because we've had a big relaunch of Vogue Weddings this month, and we've been really focusing on our wedding content. And we wanted to chat with you guys who are our sort of wedding, resident wedding experts. Liam has also, but he has abstained for the moment.
He's on vacation.
He's on vacation. And we wanted to hear a little bit about, like, what is a day in the life for someone who's covering Vogue weddings?
A day in the life. I mean, typically, you know, Elise, Liam, and I are talking constantly in real time. Submissions are coming in, we're receiving them, we're reviewing them. We're also, you know, going out to different PRs and celebrities about upcoming weddings and making sure we're in the know, as well as talking to event planners, photographers, you know, really kind of like embedding ourselves within the industry to make sure that we kind of have a full handle on, you know, what's coming up with regards to everything happening in the world of weddings.
I'm curious to know, Alex, just because I've known you for quite a while. Were you one of those girls growing up who fantasized about their wedding? Because I had a lot of friends who made, I mean, I guess back then it would be not Pinterest boards, but were definitely making mood boards.
No. So I started covering weddings back in around 2011. And, you know, at the time, we knew each other, Choma, because I was the managing editor of Vogue.com. And the Prince and Princess of Wales, so William and Kate, not Charles and Diana, were getting married that year. And I was really into it. That's what really sparked my interest and led to us ultimately covering weddings in a bigger way on Vogue.com. You know, obviously the magazine was doing big features from time to time. Like I remember LSDs, Miranda Brooks's.
Lauren Sanchez Domingo. Ones.
Yes.
Amal Clooney's wedding. Sykes. Amal Clooney's wedding.
Yes. Oh, that was a favorite of mine. And then I had previously worked at Ralph Lauren, and David and Lauren Bush Lauren's wedding was another big one.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
I was in charge of doing weddings in the book, in the magazine back then. And it is interesting to think back on. I mean, we really did weddings big. We would send a photographer. We would send a writer. I remember Plum Sykes sort of, you know, invoicing us for her entire travel to Caroline Sieber's
right.
Deluxe. Oh, that one was bonkers.
That was crazy.
We almost need to repost that wedding because it was so insane.
But I do feel like then Instagram sort of changed the game for in-book weddings. Right, Elise?
Yeah. You know, I would say that this was kind of during the age when the wedding hashtag was really big. I know that's kind of a little bit foreign to us now. But if you go back to 2014, everyone had a hashtag for their wedding. And because everyone had a hashtag for their wedding, some of these grand, big weddings would go viral. And then it became more of a news moment rather than an in-book moment. And I think, Alex, you witnessed that firsthand, right, with Nell
hashtag
Diamond.
Hashtag Nell and Teddy.
Yeah, hashtag Nell and Teddy, Nell Diamonds.
Exactly.
This is Nell Diamond and Teddy Wasserman's wedding.
Yes. I mean, that wedding in particular really changed the game.
Tell us about that wedding.
I think the imagery coming out of it, like Elise said, was just next level. You know, it was at Hotel de Cap Eden Rock, which is ultimately where Sophia Richie had her wedding years later. But this was, you know, a location that, you know, many people, they don't get to see inside of. I think that she had a hotel room just for the dress.
Oh,
she did indeed.
I'm sorry. I need to pause right there and just exhale. What?
Like, yeah.
Yes.
Why?
So there were so many things.
The dress was enormous.
It was.
Olivia Taeskens made the dress, and it was like, I mean, I'm watching a lot of princess movies now at home, and it truly was one of those type of dresses. Like, just the train, the volume, it actually needed that much square footage to exist.
That was my first Vogue wedding that I ever saw.
Really?
I didn't even work here.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, didn't really pay any attention to it. I'd fallen in love. I think it took me a while to fall in love with weddings. I've never wanted to have a wedding, so.
Interesting.
Do you remember when I asked everybody to do their dream wedding?
I think you triggered
boards.
Me somehow. I was like, no.
I'm sorry, you did what, Alex?
I asked everybody to make like a dream wedding board, and you didn't have to be getting married, but it was just kind of
I know.
Something
was
that
this
we could
like
post.
A team building, or was this actually
internet? It was for content. And so we could post it and you know, you could pick your location and what you would wear and kind of merch it out with product, and it allowed us to create shopping content. But a few people were strongly against it, but then ultimately ended up enjoying the exercise.
Do you guys, I feel like there's a misconception of Vogue covering weddings that the writers always attend the weddings. How many weddings that you're covering are you actually going to?
So just a handful. I mean, really kind of the very high profile ones that warrant, you know, boots on the ground.
What's an example of that?
So Serena Williams in 2017. It was in November of 2017, planned by Jennifer Zibinski. It was in New Orleans.
I remember
Orleans,
that one. She wore sneakers. Yeah. That burned in my memory. It was so cute.
Exactly.
That's on Choma's mood board.
She married Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, which that feels timely this week.
I know. They're celebrating. They're somewhere celebrating.
Yes, exactly. And she wore a dress designed by Sarah Burton for Alexander McQueen. So they got married in New Orleans, and it warranted having someone there. And so I went down. Anna actually attended as well. It was very star-studded. Beyonce was a guest. Kim Kardashian was a guest. And it was incredibly exciting. I was thrilled to be there. You know, we posted and it just took off. I mean, the interest was so intense, and it was exciting because it was like we were really breaking news, and I loved every second of it.
I mean, there's something about, for me, I mean, listen, we cover big events where, you know, I've been in the room with those women, but being at Serena Williams' wedding, to me, I don't know how you just like, how do you keep cool and just hang out and go and dance on the dance floor at Serena? I mean, what's happening? Like,
it was wild. I mean, I couldn't believe the access, and I feel so lucky to have gotten it. You know, I was back there with her before she walked down the aisle. I was hanging out with Venus. I'm not a big red wine drinker. And she was like, Alex, drink the red wine. I was like, okay. And, you know, I was there helping Serena and fluffing the train and, you know, doing all the things to make sure.
Wow,
that
Alex was in the bridal party.
Wow.
Basically.
Oh, God, how did I not know this?
Elise, what's the craziest wedding you've ever been to?
The craziest wedding I've ever been to or I've written about?
Either.
Let me think. You know what? I think the craziest wedding that I wrote about was definitely Kourtney Kardashian's.
Wow.
Because like Serena Williams is, that was one where the news was breaking while we had this exclusive. And so it was like a race against time, but also like a race against paparazzi pictures.
Okay. So this was recently.
Yeah, this was Kravis. So we had the exclusive on the Kravis wedding, and
you know, Kravis.
I thought his name was Travis. Why are we
as
calling
a couple?
You?
Oh, Kourtney and
Kravis.
I'm on it.
Well, anyways, that wedding was really, really crazy because the paparazzi photos around that started breaking. I think like Wednesday or Thursday before even the event started, and there was just this worldwide focus on the Kravis wedding. And Alex and I, that was a crazy weekend for Alex because you had Chloe's wedding at the same time.
Chloe 70?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like all of a sudden we had these, you know, two very high profile weddings on and the same weekend.
Yet very different.
Very different.
Yes, very different.
Very different. And so both of us were texting each other throughout about like how crazy each of our respective weddings were, even though they were in totally different silos.
But oh my God.
For me, it was basically having to pressure the Kardashian and Dolce & Gabbana team, because Kourtney wore Dolce & Gabbana, about getting me the assets as quick as possible.
Mm.
Because we knew the more paparazzi photos that were out there, the less power our exclusive would have. So that became a race against time about being like, we need to do this now. It was probably one of our, I think, the most red wedding of that year, with probably Chloe coming in like a very close second. But Alex and I were really working all weekend on different celebrities that weekend, but I think
how
there was some
they?
Tweet this, like,
can't they space these things out? I guess not much crossover with the guest list, though, huh?
Very no, I don't think that was...
Nobody was invited to both, huh?
But it was really funny because if you looked at Vogue weddings, I was like, we have two very different aesthetics that you can look at today. Pick your poison, pick your celebrity.
Oh, my God. I think everyone wants to know, what makes a Vogue wedding?
When people ask me this question, I always talk about how there's an X factor. You know, we're always looking for interesting couples. Sometimes they're celebrities, sometimes they're not. Oftentimes they have cool jobs. Occasionally they met in a really interesting way or the proposal was really unique.
I just want to ask one thing because we've talked a lot about the big weddings and I love a big wedding, but like, let's talk about the little micro weddings that are personal touches that have been featured on Vogue.com.
I agree. That is what's fun to see is like, we know that the Kardashian wedding's going to do well, but it's fun to see real life people who are having a sort of a more intimate, less ostentatious wedding really pop off.
Exactly. And I think that's what's so interesting and neat about what we do is I think a lot of people think that, oh, you know, a Vogue wedding has to have, you know, an insane budget. And I think, sure, that is the case for many of the weddings that we cover, but it's not the case for everyone. And I think what's more important than anything else is that it feels, you know, true to the couple and personal and that there are unique details woven throughout the weekend. I often think of like Elaine Welchoff's wedding.
Oh, yeah. I was there.
Noma, you were there. And that took place, you know, during the height of the pandemic. Yeah. And it was on the stoop of her brownstone in Brooklyn. And it just was so, so beautiful.
I was sort of nervous for her, I'll be honest, because I was like, mm-hmm. I think this is inappropriate. Like, cut the guest list, da da da. Like, we went back and forth a lot. And then when mm-hmm. she did it, the whole block came alive. You know, it was like the nicest thing that happened in such a long time. And just perfect. It was beautiful, magical, you know?
And that really came through in the photos. I think it just felt so hopeful and so positive.
Well, Alex and I, we always talk about, you know, Vogue weddings are aspirational, right? But every single wedding we have, the couple always feels like slightly cooler than you. Yeah. Every wedding is like, you look at that couple and you're like, damn, they're cool. We do it with everyone from big celebrities like Sophia Richie, but also, you know, people who don't have that megawatt spotlight around them. You know, one of my favorite weddings was Trinity Wolford, who did this really amazing wedding in upstate New York, and her dress was only $200. And she wore no makeup. And that wedding was
was so sweet.
It was so sweet, and it was so sincere to the couple, and they designed the whole thing themselves. And, you know, there's something so cool about that, being like, this bride wore no makeup. She thrifted her dress. She designed her whole wedding herself. And guess what? It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at that, you're like, damn, I don't think I could have done that. And that's so important to Vogue weddings, to have that key of this was really cool what they did.
So one of my closest friends and former roommates, we used to be roommates in Brooklyn, she got married in jeans. And I remember going shopping with her and she wore actually one of my vintage coats and a dress that we got at a current affair and, you know, these like beautiful Dolce heels. But it was so beautiful. But yeah, it's so funny what you know, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to be the big wedding.
Well, unless it is the big wedding.
Unless
which
it
I
is the big wedding.
About.
Boom.
Elise.
Probably the craziest wedding that I've covered, which is not a wedding, by the way, it's a pre-wedding, is Radhika Merchant and Anant Ambani. And they are the Mumbai-based couple, and they had a pre-wedding that took the internet by storm. And where it kind of started is there was this post on X, Twitter, but, you know, of Rihanna arriving in India. And it was like, why is Rihanna in India? And then it came to light that she was performing at this pre-wedding of Anant Ambani. Anant Ambani's father is one of the richest men in the world. And once that started, it did not stop. And, you know, Khloe and I worked on this very, very closely because just like Kourtney Kardashian's wedding, the internet was all over this. It was all over social media. Guests would be posting TikToks, and those TikToks would go viral. And we were just, like, trying to keep up with making sure that, like, we got the exclusive assets in time to capitalize on this moment. And luckily, the Ambani team was fantastic and the most responsive people I've ever
worked
with.
Extremely responsive. I woke up at 6 a.m. one morning to 242 WhatsApp messages. Mm-hmm.
That was the other kind of wonderfully chaotic thing about this wedding is that since it was in real time, no one was sitting at a computer and emailing, right? And so the entire wedding was communicated to us and sent to us over WhatsApp. It was a daunting, daunting task. And the one thing that, like, we hadn't really seen on that level is the jewels. Because for an Indian pre-wedding, the jewelry is so important. And that was the first time I've seen a, you know, a bride-to-be not necessarily go viral for her gowns, which were amazing. Her gowns and saris were incredible. But to go viral for their jewelry. And also the jewelry that, you know, Anant's mother was wearing. And that is something that I've never seen our audience react to.
An emerald the size of a baseball. I mean, it almost made it seem like she wasn't going to be able to stand up.
Oh, my God.
This emerald was so big.
That was something unique to that wedding.
Is there anything anyone can do to get their wedding in vogue?
They'll try it if there's a way and they want it. Come on. You know that.
I will say, like, we get bribes. I've had people email me being like, I will pay you to get into Vogue weddings. I'm like, so I'm not going to do that.
So I always say that I cannot emphasize enough how important the choice of photographer is. It is incredibly important. And sometimes people leave it to the end. And at that point, they've kind of run out of budget. And so they don't think about it as much as they should. There are many situations where a wedding will sound, quote unquote, good on paper. And then the images roll in. And unfortunately, they're a bit lackluster because there wasn't enough emphasis put on that choice and that decision. So,
you know, sometimes when we're even, you know, passing on Vogue weddings, we actually usually never say like, oh, your wedding was great, but we're not going to run it. We're like, we usually just emphasize, you know, your wedding was probably fantastic. Just your photography is not the right fit for us.
Right.
And to give people some context, you know, this is because we've developed a format where we run, you know, about 60 images from the wedding on Vogue.com. And so this isn't a situation where we're not just running like 8 or 10 images, you know, we're running 60 to sometimes 100. And we're really kind of giving people a picture of what that wedding weekend looked like. So it's everything from, you know, those initial events that happen at the beginning of the wedding weekend to the getting ready moments, you know, dress on a hanger, although that image is somewhat controversial because there are some people in the wedding industry who feel that has been very played out. But you know what
Please break that down for me. It's just played out. People are bored of seeing it. Okay.
Yes. And then there's a whole school of thought where like some people go out and they hang the dress on a hanger from a tree and people are like, oh my God, this is so bizarre. What's happening here? So any sort of like highly orchestrated, highly curated images like that are very frowned upon and we don't really run. But
we all have
them.
Different triggers. Yeah. Alex's dress on tree.
Okay, so Alex's trigger is dress on a tree. What's your trigger, Elise?
Oh, we have so many.
Give us a few.
Donut wall.
Donut wall,
oh,
bad.
God. Donut wall, what else? I want to know what else really, what makes the Vogue wedding Slack channel crawl?
Oh, a dog wearing a sign that said, my humans got married. Any dog wearing a sign, I don't love.
I love pets, but pets incorporated into weddings can be difficult. There's a specific kind of wedding calligraphy, that's what I'll call it, that I really find triggering. And Elise knows this. I cannot handle it. It's not
what?
Okay. You guys know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about like on signage.
So it's the live, laugh, love font?
Oh, no.
That font.
That's unacceptable.
I cannot handle it. And it is used a lot. It's all over Pinterest. It's bad.
There's a big trend to do pool parties. Which is like a really fun.
This is triggering for you.
It's a really fun. Yes, like it's a really fun wedding activity, but you're photographing all your guests in the bikinis and bathing suits, and then you send us about 100 of those photos. Don't do this to your guests.
No one wants that. Yeah.
And it's usually on the day after the wedding, so everyone is horrendously hungover. And so you're looking at a bunch of hungover people in bathing suits, and you're just like, just don't do it to your guests. Let your guests be hungover in a pool in peace. That's what I want to be at your wedding.
I kind of want to know, so when I used to cover weddings in the magazine, at one point Anna was looking at like a list of former brides and half of them had gotten divorced within 5 years. And Anna was like, Chloe, you're the patron saint of divorce or something to that end. And I'm just wondering, is a large percentage of Vogue weddings, are they going the divorce rate? Do you ever feel it when you're putting the photos together? You're like, oof, this is going to last a year.
Yes. We don't run those weddings, though, because there's another one of our triggers. Can I say it? Is that one of Alex and I's triggers is a wedding we call, like, she's Barbie and he's just Ken. We're like, all the photos we get, like, the groom is just, like, not in them or, like, an afterthought. And we try not to run those weddings because we do want it to be, you know, a celebration of love and a joyous day. And usually when it's a, you know, she's Barbie wedding, it means it's not going to go so well.
And then I'll say I definitely had a strong feeling with Britney Spears.
I mean, when I you and everyone else.
Did we cover
else.
Britney's wedding?
Yeah, but covering that wedding, let's just say I had a feeling. That was a fraught one. But for the most part, I think, I mean, I'm speaking off the cuff here, I think that our divorce rate is actually quite low. I've commented on that a few times. I don't know. I feel like, I don't want to misspeak here, but I feel like we have a sort of a sixth sense for these things, and you know, we do what we can, and it seems to be that the numbers are working in our favor, because you know, it's rarely come up, but
when it does, though, we're like just as heartbroken as the couple themselves, because
I truly am. I mean, I think of these weddings like children sometimes, and it's hard. I mean, I get really invested, and so I don't know. Chloe, you always make fun of me, but...
So what you're saying is having your wedding featured on Vogue is like a good luck charm, or...?
Hopefully.
Yeah, let's go with that, Choma. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is really fun.
And yeah, thank you for having us.
Season is only just beginning, so get ready for the Vogue wedding slack to kick it into high gear.
Good to see you guys.
Bye.
That's it for this episode. See you soon.
The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. At Graff, everything begins with the diamond. The most precious material on Earth and a symbol of love and commitment since time began. Creators of diamond history, Graff has dominated the list of historical and important rough diamonds discovered, cut, and polished this century. Generations of the Graff family have devoted their lives to crafting diamonds of great beauty, rarity, and perfection. Under their guardianship, highly accomplished master artisans create diamond jewelry of magnificent beauty and extraordinary radiance.